Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Graham Fuller, the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. He has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, World Without Islam, and Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Embracing Assad is a Better Strategy for the U.S. than Supporting the Least Bad Jihadis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Graham Fuller.
Thank you, Ian.
So this, of course, is a pretty bitter pill for the U.S. to swallow, given former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's proclamation that Assad was going to fall. And there is, however, I think, pretty obvious evidence, is there not, that as the U.S. bombs the Islamic State or ISIL in Syria, Assad is now free to turn his guns on the Free Syrian Army, the very people who the U.S. support, so, and who have want to commit another $500 million worth of arms and training to. So that in itself is a pretty glaring contradiction, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I think the whole problem has been fraught with this contradiction since the very beginning, but they're growing worse. And by the way, I did not choose that title for the article saying that dealing with Assad was better than dealing with the most most moderate jihadis.
Yeah.
That was the newspaper put that in. But certainly, I make the case that it's very hard to find moderate jihadis that are going to be sufficiently capable of battling Assad and sufficiently moderate that we could sit down, we could contemplate them in government, much less arrange it.
But in a sense, the history of the U.S. recently has been one of toppling secular Arab leaders, starting with Saddam Hussein and then Gaddafi. And Assad hasn't fallen, but that's not because the U.S. hasn't wanted him to fall. So what do you think is behind that? Because invariably it leads to empowering the worst kind of Islamist radicals.
Well, it does. And the cases that you've cited is exactly what we've seen. Unfortunately, there are not really very many alternatives out there. The leaders who have been secular dictators have generally had the only opposition they face has come from the Islamists. So when they fall, the Islamists tend to be the natural beneficiary. And indeed, in Egypt, to nobody's surprise, the Muslim Brotherhood actually won by a small margin the election. So, you know, all of us think how nice it would be to have liberal, secularist, modernists, moderates in power, but they represent such a tiny part of the political spectrum in these countries that it's an impossible expectation that that they would actually make it to power and hold on to power.
So is there any chance, do you think, that the U.S., in the case of Assad and Syria, could swallow the bitter pill of realpolitik?
Well, I think it's probably coming in the sense in that the whole Islamic State issue has suddenly now leapt to the forefront of U.S. concerns in the region far more urgently than the overthrow of the Assad government itself has ever been. I mean, we've seen how slowly Obama, and even reluctantly and cautiously, Obama has moved against Assad to whether he would actually bomb Syria or not. We've seen that caution, but there's been no caution, relatively speaking, towards choking or destroying the Islamic State. So I doubt that it's possible to do both. And therefore, I suspect that Washington, without ever saying it, without ever admitting it, is probably going to simply either look the other way or come to terms quietly with Assad, or simply lessen, if not end, aid to the range of jihadi forces that have been battling him, whether they be considered moderate or less moderate.
Again, I'm speaking with Graham Fuller, who's the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. He has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, A World Without Islam, and his latest is Turkey and the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Embracing Assad is a Better Strategy for the U.S. Than Supporting the Least Bad Jihadis, and the caveat being that you didn't choose that headline. But what is then the likelihood of, isn't it likely, Graham Fuller, that in President Obama's long conversations on the phone with Vladimir Putin, Putin has made this suggestion, you know, that the best way to get rid of the Islamic State is to work with Assad, and the whole thing will be over, and the destruction of Syria will stop. And the country has been largely destroyed, and a third of its population has been displaced, and over 200,000 people have died, and there are countless in prison. And that, of course, is one of the reasons why Assad is so distasteful, is how he treats his own people. And I imagine also in these negotiations with the Iranians over the nuclear issue, which is coming to a head now, the Iranians have probably made all kinds of suggestions along those lines. Is there any, well, let's begin with this. Do you think that the Iranians and the Russians could in any way lean on Assad? Assuming it gets to the point where the U.S. wants to make a deal, but they need to get rid of Assad because they simply can't abide him. Could those other backers of the regime find a cosmetic way to get somebody else in there?
Well, of course, Assad is distasteful, but it's important to remember that he was nothing like a Saddam Hussein, say, in the days in which there were no insurrections taking place in Syria. So it's become vastly uglier as a result of those insurrections and then the internationalization of that insurrection with backing from Saudi Arabia and Turkey and from the United States and others. So I don't think Putin or Russia has any strong brief for Assad as such. I think they have even said that more or less. But the problem is now I think both Iran and Russia would be loath to see a government replacing Assad that would be, say, an immediate ally of the West. First of all, I don't think that's a realistic thing. I don't think that's going to happen. If there were moderate jihadis who take over a Muslim Brotherhood or whatever, they may be moderate, but they're not going to become allies of the West. So I think the fear that any new regime is really going to be an ally of the West on the part of either Iran or Russia is perhaps exaggerated. On top of that, I doubt very much that all the powers that be among the Alawi leadership, the Alawi community, I doubt that they are going to would consider overthrowing or dumping Assad in the middle of chaos and war. That would simply be a huge sign of weakness, a huge emboldening of the anti-Assad crowd. So I suspect that if we want to get rid of Assad as such, the situation is probably going to have to be considerably tamped down, become quieter, and leaving the Alawite broader regime comfortable that they could put Assad on a plane out of the country without having that bring down the entire system. So I think those are some of the calculations that are at work.
But there's no evidence that any of these discussions are going on. At this point, the U.S. is making it clear that while they're attacking the Islamic State or ISIL in Syria, they're also opposed to Assad, even though his foreign minister at the UN the other day more or less suggested that the U.S. and Syria are allies.
Well, that was a self-serving comment, I'm sure, and trying to put some pressure on Obama. But in terms of the Islamic State, indeed, they are de facto allies, as Iran is, and as is Russia. So I just wish that Washington would get over this long-term hang-up of finding it very difficult finding it impossible to deal with Iran on these issues. I'm heartened that with these nuclear negotiations, and I actually think that they're probably going to work for a variety of reasons, but I wish we were a little more willing to deal in greater depth with Iran on the question of Syria as well. Who knows? Those talks may be taking place quietly out of the public view. I don't know. But we just can't judge the Syrian situation by saying, oh, my God, if Russia benefits or if Iran benefits, then that's got to be bad. It's possible that Iran can benefit, Russia can benefit, and we can benefit, and the region can benefit, and Turkey can benefit if this war is allowed to come to an end. I say that with no particular satisfaction or joy. It will be a modest setback, and I certainly don't like to see Assad emerge strongly in this situation. But he has been grievously damaged, even if he's holding on to power. So the future of Syria is not going to be simply a bloodthirsty dictator. I think they've got to, they're going to have to rejig their entire policies, both domestic and foreign, if they're going to have a state in the future that's viable.
And Graham Fuller, did you happen to read or see the Rouhani, the new Iranian leader's speech at the UN?
No, I haven't had a chance to see that yet.
Well, it was actually quite interesting and quite sober and quite realistic. I thought, of course, we don't know the extent to which, what autonomy he has, but he seems like a very reasonable person and somebody that one could deal with. And your feeling is, and I've heard this from other people too, is that this nuclear deal may actually come to fruition.
Yeah, and I'm not even following the details of it, which are exceedingly complex and technical, but I just, having watched the region for most of my life, I just have a feeling in my bones that this time around the body language is different, the talk is different, the situation is different, the pace of the faces and personalities are different. I think there's a very good chance that this is going to work. And if it works in that area, then I think some effort to try to deal with these extreme jihadis in both within Iraq and Syria can find some cooperation from Syria and, as I say, from Russia, Turkey, and others. The big question mark is Saudi Arabia, because they were one of the early ones to slap down big bucks and insert their own radical jihadis onto the scene. Now, how willing they will be to back off is unknown, but Riyadh's refusal to deal with Iran seems to have already been under some considerable change. I think they recognize that this is the U.S. Iranian rapprochement is probably going to come about. They don't want to be left out of this, and typically they are now back-channel negotiations themselves.
So turning to Turkey, which has been the odd man out in terms of the anti-ISIS coalition, I think 26 nations met in Paris recently, including Russia and China, to develop a collective strategy against the Islamic State. And Turkey, obviously, with sharing borders with Syria and Iraq, one would think that they would be extremely involved. And of course, there's an important NATO base in Incirlik. But there are reports now, as this battle is underway between ISIL in Syria and the Kurds, the Syrian Kurds, the Democratic Union Party, the Syrian Kurdish PYD, are charging that Turkey's military are in cahoots with what they call Daesh, the jihadis, and that Islamist fighters are coming across from Turkey?
Well, I think Turkey is in an nearly intolerable situation, and it's a situation that they have created for themselves. I have immense respect for Turkish foreign policy in the years preceding. I think they made major steps forward towards starting to deal with all the countries of the region, and they were strongly supportive of regime change as the Arab Spring got underway in Tunisia and Egypt and Libya and Yemen and elsewhere. Then when Assad began to face some armed uprisings, Turkey assumed that Assad too would be quick to fall. Turkey made that mistake, but so did Washington, and so did most other countries in the world. It was not an unreasonable assumption to make, perhaps, at that time. In any case, they were badly burned by it. They threw in good money after bad. Were determined that they were, that they simply got angrier and angrier. Erdogan personally as well, and were just determined that he has to go. So they began, I think, to take a much softer line towards jihadi elements fighting in Iraq and Syria against Assad. But now this has turned around to bite them. Turkey has become somewhat isolated from other countries now because they have been unwilling to get on the bandwagon. One very good reason, I'm sure, as you know, is that for many months, ISIS was holding some 48 Turkish diplomatic hostages in Iraq. So I think this probably was a situation in which they really were terrified that if they moved against ISIS, they could or the Islamic State, they could find themselves, they could find all of their diplomats slaughtered. So I suspect that was the primary reason for caution, apart from having to eat a lot of public crow as well over if they are forced to change their policy. And I think they will be forced to, if not already are doing so, quietly.
Well, just in closing, though, Graham Fuller, Turkey has apparently granted asylum to the Syrian and Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, who were expelled from Doha, Qatar, under pressure from the U.S. So what's the significance of that?
I had not heard that the brothers were expelled from Doha under U.S. pressure. Certainly, I know that under Gulf pressure, Saudi and UAE and others, there was great pressure, nearly intolerable pressure on Doha. But I don't think for a second that Qatar has given up its general sympathy for the Muslim Brotherhood and support to it. I think that once the situation quiets down, that they will probably allow these Muslim Brotherhood leaders back in. And after all, I mean, by now, the Muslim Brotherhood looks absolutely like, Western Democrats supporting free elections and embracing a whole number of other issues of Western governance. So I don't think it's dealing with the Brotherhood is in any way undesirable. In fact, the best the U.S. or anyone else could hope for if jihadis or, let's say, Islamists take over in Syria, it would be that they be from the Muslim Brotherhood because they are a known quantity. Their leadership has lived in the West in London for a long time. They're not crazy-eyed killers like the Islamic State. I think most people would view it as a pretty good alternative if we have to go the route of a Islamist government post Assad.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Graham Fuller.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Graham Fuller, who's the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. He has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam, A World Without Islam, and his latest, Turkey in the Arab Spring, Leadership in the Middle East. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Embracing Assad is a Better Strategy for the U.S. Than Supporting the Least Bad Jihadis. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about the state dinner in Washington, D.C. for the Prime Minister of India, who did not eat because he's on a religious fast.